Why listen to the past when you can listen to the future? Welcome to the Think Future podcast, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. We focus on innovation, startups, and the future, not necessarily those and not necessarily in that order. Here's your host.
So we have a very special guest for you today. We have Junying Hu, who has written an amazing book on artificial intelligence. It's called The Evolution of Artificial Intelligence, What You Must Know About AI. I just finished reading it the other day, and it's really good. I love that. I think I like the thing about the most about the book is that you've got these little anecdotes of the different inventors when they've invented various things in having to do with AI. That's really cool, along with the information that you have in the book. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and the book?
Sure. Thank you, Chris. So I grew up in a family that put a lot of emphasis on education. Both my parents are professors. Mm-hmm. I came to the U.S. for graduate school in early 90s. And after I switched to AI domain, because I have this long fascination with science fiction, I want to be at the cutting edge of AI. So yes. I got my PhD from University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. And been studying AI, I got since in 1999, so it's been 20 years. When I studied AI, it was an obscure field, very few people heard about. Mm-hmm. And now becomes so hot, so popular. But many people feel they are a little afraid, or they are felt mystified by this field. So I feel the time is right to tell the story and to really empower people to see what's inside AI. That's the purpose for writing this book.
Yeah, because you're right. I mean, for a lot of people, it's just sort of this big black box, and no one really knows what's in it. And there are a lot of moving parts to AI, right? So you talk about AI. When people say AI, it's not just a thing by itself. I mean, there's so many elements underneath it that sort of come together to become AI. So when somebody says, oh, are we talking about machine learning? Or are we talking about computer vision? Or are we talking about... So there's all these different elements that
right.
are part of AI, right? So that's true, right? Yeah.
So the way I explain AI is think about a person. The AI is trying to model the capability of a person, which is the five sense, the hear, see, feel, touch, and the taste. Essentially, if you look at human capabilities, AI is trying to map to each capability. The vision, computer vision is map our eyes. Mm-hmm. The speech recognition is map our ear. The speech synthesis is about the text-to-speech, which takes 40 years of AI to develop, to speak really naturally like a human being. And the touch and the movement, those are robotics that's been developed in the past. And finally, is the brain. It's the where you can learn and adapt. That's machine learning. So machine learning is the central part that connect everything together. And so if you think this way, it's very easy to map our capability to each of the AI subdomain.
Right. So really, artificial intelligence is kind of building an artificial person or artificial humanity. It's not just the intelligence part. The machine learning and the deep learning, all that's the intelligence part. But everything else is sort of the mobility and the ability to interact with the world and other people. Is that right?
That's right. So artificial intelligence include planning, how you kind of have a meta understanding about the world, how you interact with the world. So when we say machine learning, it always refers to learn about some patterns, like how would the customer come back or not, would this person click ads or not. Those are the simple supervised machine learning. But AI could include where do I go? How do I plan my path to reach destination? Yeah. So there's way more in AI. However, they are merging together. They are converging. This is I used to teach to tell students that if you think AI as a big circle, machine learning used to be a subset, a very small circle inside AI. Then AI has another part, is normally dominated by like a rule-based system in the past. So the machine learning part now being expanding to replacing all the rule-based system, or so-called expert system.
Right.
And in the future, even the planning will be replaced by machine learning driven, meaning I don't have to have a human write out the plan. I can learn about what's the best path. And so what I see, the trend is all this, what I meant, the non-machine learning part will be, like even speech recognition now is purely machine learning driven. So essentially, is the machine adapt starting from scratch and learn to do things?
So why has it taken so long? I mean, you started in this a long time ago. Why has it taken so long to get to this point? And are we really at a disruption point where it's really going to sort of break free from what it was before, or are we still looking at more and more years of applications, more and more years of improvement?
So the real breakthrough is the computing. So AI started in 1956, the first Dartmouth conference. And Claude Shannon actually was in that first conference, and he didn't participate because he see the difficulty of AI for the next 40 years. There's not much progress. Even up until when I started to do the dialogue speech system in 2010, it's still, the accuracy was still not there and it cannot be viable. But suddenly after 2012, there's a big jump that the accuracy suddenly crossed the threshold where make all the speech system become usable, like Amazon Alexa, Google Home, Apple Siri, because the major breakthrough come from the deep learning, but deep learning comes from computing the Moore's law that make computing so cheap, so powerful. So we have crossed that threshold. What I see is we are in total different era now.
So in 2012 or so, computing power actually caught up to where, to the promise of where AI wanted to be, or speech, at least speech recognition wanted to be, or machine learning.
2012 has two major component. One is computing power. Second is big data, meaning there's so much data to be utilized. So if you do machine learning, data is like the fuel. Like you cannot build things without the fuel.
Yeah.
And so data contribute to training, like Google Voice has been collecting data from the user. In all different companies, they've been collecting the speech data.
Yeah.
When we reach certain threshold, we're able to do that. And same thing in 2012, we have 1 million computer image data for them, labeled by human, for them to do. So 2012, the breakthrough comes from the actual in computer vision. When the deep learning driven approach suddenly surpassed the human designed model by 10%. So that is just a big breakthrough. People spend the last 40 years to improve like tiny bit, 1% every year. So they did that in 1 year. That is what's eye-opening. Yeah.
Right. So now that this breakthrough has occurred, that's why we're seeing this huge acceleration of all these technologies and how they're really creating a better artificial intelligence, right? But do we still need another breakthrough, or do you see sort of like the progression from here to a real, truly intelligent machine is within our grasp?
We have, since 2012, we have seen several major breakthroughs. In 2014, 2 years later, we applied the deep learning to natural language. So before, people saw deep learning only apply to image or speech. Those are very low-level features. We don't understand what's going on. But natural language is normally considered very hard. It's high-level human thinking. 2014, the same deep learning model applied to natural language and dramatically improved the machine translation. So machine translation actually become practical software. And 20, just 3 years later, just last year, the machine reading comprehension surpassed the human in reading a paragraph of text. That is also a big breakthrough. We are seeing major breakthrough every year. And this year, consider that 2016, computer beat human world champion in Go game. Go considers almost impossible to solve. It used to be think it's a decade away. So 2016 is breakthrough. Now, after Go game, after AlphaGo, people thought maybe Go is a board game, is simple. Computer cannot solve complex game like a multiplayer game. So 2018, we see the OpenAI 5, which is a five neural network that beat a human world level player, right? And so it's a very complex game in Dota 2. Then early this year, DeepMind released another called AlphaStar that beat a human top world champion for not a champion but a top 30 player in StarCraft. StarCraft has tens of thousands of actions and many very dynamic. So that's a major breakthrough.
No, I read about that and I thought to myself, wow, that's really cool. Still, however, I mean, you're talking about game worlds, which have specific narrow sets of rules, right? You said there's 10,000, 20,000 rules, but the real world has nearly infinite number of rules. So, is there a huge difference? Isn't that a huge difference in order of magnitude between these things mastering these human created worlds and the real world? Or is it just a very, like, it should just be a sort of like, it's not even an exponential, it's like a slight increase to get to the point where they can actually work in the real world?
In what I see in the real world, your action is actually limited, much less. Actually, less action choice available. If you say a robot working at home, the robot only has a few actions to take, going to this room, that room, left, right. Even if it can turn around, it's still very limited. It's actually less complex than the dynamic game.
Well, in a home. Yeah, that's right.
Then just think about the finance. Now people apply the same methodology to financial industry. You can buy or sell. You can increase the price. You can bid down the price. So, in the real world, the action what we call is finite. We each face a finite decision. And we model this. So the breakthrough actually in 2018 is called reinforcement learning. This takes deep learning to the next stage. Since AlphaGo, we combine deep learning with reinforcement learning, where we this is actually particularly used to model your action in the real world, how you interact with the real world. So reinforcement learning now take AI to the next step to actually see how AI agent to interact with the world.
So basically, what's that's telling me is that based on the speed of the breakthroughs we're having over the last little while, that we really will have a lot of AI able to replace human beings in certain roles in less than a couple of years, right? It sounds like we're going to get to that point now, or even now, it's probably being applied. I mean, I remember there was it some trading company that was replacing all of their analysts with algorithms? I forget what the name of the company was.
The one of the chief currently the one of the largest hedge fund, Citadel, hired the chief scientist from Microsoft on speech. His name is Li Deng. And he's the one who pioneered the speech recognition, applying deep learning to speech recognition. Now he's a chief scientist for a financial company. They also in JP Morgan, they hired someone from Google. My friend Apu Saxena now joined the JP Morgan as a global head of AI. So those are you can see the finance, they do need that.
So that's the thing. I mean, actually, I wrote a blog post about this, is that a lot of white collar workers really have to worry about their jobs more than anything, right? Because a lot of it is data processing, which can be done probably a lot easier by an AI than bricklaying, Right? So if I was going to build a house, obviously there's 3D printers that build homes, but if I was going to build a house, that would be more of a human task than deciding which stocks to trade or which bits to move around on an Excel spreadsheet, right? So if you're talking about job loss, and I know a lot of people are really worried that there's going to be job loss because of AI being so powerful so quick, what's going to happen? I mean, I've listened to some futurist. There's one futurist, Thomas Frei, who said, "Oh, even in the autonomous car space, we're going to have 2 million of job losses." And it's just sort of dystopia, right? It sounds like when AI comes, it's the end of the world, and humans will just be sort of pushed to the side. But I don't think that's true, right? What's your thought?
In terms of all the job disappearing, this could be true, but at the same time, there are new jobs being created. There now already there's a huge gap between the market demand for data scientists, data engineers, versus the supply. So there's a shortage of the market was so hot. If you know a little bit of AI or deep learning, you will be immediately hired away. And so, and for people, sorry, for people who know even programming, anything associated with AI, you're a software engineer, the job is still growing, and supporting the AI. And there's a new job created for building robots. There's like robot education robot going into home, the toy robot that can teach the children. There's so many new jobs being created.
So the question, so you mentioned data science before and how data scientists are really necessary for growth of AI. How does somebody get into that? I mean, is there it, can you can we retrain? So we're talking about these people losing their jobs to, so let's say a financial analyst gets fired because they're bringing in an algorithm to do his job. Would this financial analyst be able to become a data scientist?
Yes, with enough training, and if the person has a basic college degree, it's totally trainable. There are many programs now online offers 6 months program to get people from knowing nothing about AI to actually find a job in AI. So essentially, what you need to train to get a basic level in AI domain, certainly train yourself with a little bit of programming. I'm talking about two tracks. One is technical track that you actually going into supporting the technology engineering. Another track is certainly marketing, product management. That's two different tracks, right? First, take the one who really want to be engineer who, because coding is learnable. There's so many coding school now available.
Oh yeah,
So
my
that's
son
first.
actually went to coding school instead of college. He
You're
went straight
right.
to he went straight to Coding House, and then now he's working in a cloud company. But yeah, he didn't he the cloud com sorry the coding school was enough for him. So he learned JavaScript, he learned all this stuff. So I'm assuming there's coding schools for data science too right now as well.
There are some, but not enough. Most coding school do not have AI because AI talent, AI knowledge is still very scarce. So you see a mushrooming grow a new actually specialized AI school now coming out. The even my company AIPro.io, we are building this whole AI program for people to pursue a career in AI.
Wow, that's great. Because we need that, right? And that's the other thing is that I think the other piece of it is that it's very similar to what happened to there's all to other sorts of. So I was talking about so it's like what happened at other times when we have an industrial revolution, we have an information revolution. There's all these giant changes, and it's very disruptive. And a lot of people are so afraid that they're going to lose their jobs. But then there's thousands or even more jobs on the other side of the break that we don't even know about. I mean, today we know about data science jobs, we know about other AI jobs, but there's probably tons of other jobs that will just be generated from the AI revolution. So as these
That's
things
true.
occur, we don't even some of those jobs we don't even know what they are. We have no idea. It's kind of like prior to the web, nobody knew what a web designer was, and now there's lots of web designers and a lot of people are making a lot of money as web designers, but they had no idea prior to that.
Yes. So, for example, let me give you one job that's AI related but not requiring engineering. It's called the data labeler. Because when you we need a lot of data to train the computer. So we actually get a human to label videos, to label images. And this is this huge job creation in there for people tell us what's going on inside the video, like the person's throwing a ball or making a face. All this, there's millions of such image requires labeling. So there are actually many startups just devoted to data labeling. That's a huge job creation.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. So it sounds like we don't have to worry that much. Jobs, there will be jobs, and there will be things that we can retrain ourselves to.
Yes, look at back 20 years ago or look back 100 years ago when people project like people when new technology, when internet comes, there will be more job loss. But still today, look at our employment rate, right?
Exactly. So, and one of the things in the book you talk about is virtual assistants. Now, I love virtual assistants, and I think there's a lot of promise there. But even though, and you've mentioned it before, that there's been all these breakthroughs in speech recognition, speech creation, and stuff like that. But still, my v virtual assistant is not as good as it probably could be. What's holding us back to make these things really good?
Well, it's not easy for a virtual assistant to understand the human intention because when humans say something, there are many meanings, right? Even a simple thing like play Whitney Houston, it sounds like it's playing these songs by this artist, but sometimes could be a channel that I created, could be. There's multiple meaning behind the sentence. You need a context to understand what a human means. Human also make mistake in if you don't know a person right very well, you need to always get to know the person, engage in discussion. The computer, we if we can so that if we can crack that, we already achieve the so-called Turing pass the Turing test that we actually make computer like human. So this is I consider the last frontier of AI, but we are actually approaching very fast. We are moving toward there. Right now, Amazon Alexa can do multiple rounds of conversation with me. For example, it says, as I schedule meeting, and then she said, at what time? And I tell her the time. Then she said, what kind of meeting? So I need to tell her the name. This kind of multi-round conversation is a step toward that
Oh
dialogue we call
yeah, no, I love
conversation.
that. I love that. I book all my meetings through Alexa in that same way, because that's so much easier than just typing it in, like going to the
Exactly.
and the and the yeah. The only downside is I think you've nailed it, is that it doesn't know me well enough to say when I say play 2019 playlist that I mean this playlist for 2019 that I created. Da 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 da. So we're gonna get to that point, but do we need to have some kind of Do we need to have some kind of, because I think the biggest reason why we're not there is because there's all these barriers to data sharing, right? Because Amazon has some data about me, Google has some data about me, Facebook has some data about me, Netflix has some data. So all of these silos of data are out there, and it's not all put in one place so that my AI can go, hey, listen, when he was talking about this is what he meant because of this. So, Amazon knows X amount about me, but it doesn't know everything. So if it knew everything, then it would be able to do a better job of appealing to what I wanted, right?
Actually, you would be surprised how much they know about us.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, if
That's good to know.
basically, when many people told me this experience, whatever they search on the internet, the next time they use their phone, the similar ads pop up, right? That means their action was traced through the internet, and the browser, the cookie knows who they are, what they do, and they do have cross-platform tracking on the user. We do have data about the user, so it's not a lack of data right now. Basically, Google knows everything I searched. They also read my email, right? They process our email. I know that, but it's still very hard to build a dialogue system. The reason for that is in a different context, in a different moment. So first of all, they have to devote a lot of resource to really personalize Alexa model. So take this example, 2019 songs.
Mm-hmm.
They need to build an individual model for you from another quiz who has total different taste.
Yeah.
So right now they build one machine learning model that apply to everyone, so that's scalable. For we build a personalized model for every person, that's a lot of computing involved. So they have fine-tuned the machine learning for every person to take into your data to some people have fewer data, some people have more data. So it's a data issue. It's not a cross part. Yeah, it's some are basically lacking data for certain people, so it's
Yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
The second thing is the computer model. Certainly, I would say still not there for building a data system.
Right. So that's another thing we need data scientists to work on. Is that right?
Yes, for the next 5 years.
Cool. So it will, I mean, it's already gotten better. I've had this thing for a couple of years now, and it's already gotten better, much better than it was. So it's just going to get better and better and better. And I'm hoping there's going to be another breakthrough sometime this year, and it'll get like super great right away. So
Not that
speaking,
fast,
I
but
hope so. You
it's
never know.
coming. I do notice, by the way, I do notice Alexa started to say more things than before. Like,
Yeah, I
didn't
noticed
say
that
in the
too.
weekend, I say, have a good weekend. Really, she never said that before.
Yeah, she's starting to be have a little more personality, which is great, and I'm kind of hoping Google Assistant starts doing that too. But so based on what's happened over the last little while, what's the most exciting thing that's happened from in your perspective in this space? The most exciting technology, the most exciting thing that's happened in this space. What do you think is the most exciting?
Are you talking about the AI technology or AI application?
AI,
So,
either one. Like, what is most exciting to you? What do you think is the most interesting and exciting thing?
well, in 2010, we have one major breakthrough. It's called the Auto ML, automated machine learning, which means now we don't need a data scientist. We just throw data and the machine figure out what's the best model, what's the best neural network to build. And this basically revolutionized how we build machine learning model. We used to have a data scientist sitting there, play with different model, tune the parameters, figure out what's the best machine learning model to build. Now this is automated, right? So that part is continuing developing this year. The second, yeah, so I'm giving you two if you're asking the most exciting.
No, I mean,
This
automated machine learning sounds a bit scary, though, right? I mean, isn't it? I mean, you just throw a bunch of data at it and you let it build the models? And I'm assuming it can build models that we'd never even think to build, right?
Yes.
So it could build
It's
some really
going beyond
crazy
the
models.
human.
Are we able to look at the models and look at what they did? And say, wow, this is cool.
Yes.
It could be something that humans would never have built.
It's already happening.
Wow.
They build something we never thought possible. We just train. We just give them the data and the model. The whole deep learning network, neural network, build itself.
Nice.
The major development in this year is we started to, there's companies look into inside, try to interpret neural network. But personally, I think when they become more complex, it's like a brain. You know the neuron are there. You know 86 billion neurons they are working. You don't have to look into how each neuron actually acts. You can certainly look into certain regions to see what they do. But essentially, you just verify. So there are a lot of work going to verification on a computer system.
So the other thing, actually, I forgot to ask you about this on the virtual assistants, is that one of the things that I know that is really clear about these things is that they're all very sort of reactive, right? I have to ask it to do stuff, and then it will do things for me. And is there a reason why we've sort of not allowed them to be more proactive? Because I mean, that's what I'm looking for. If I want a real virtual assistant, I want to be able to tell it to do stuff for me without me having to tell it to do stuff. Sort of give it a command at one point and then it have it repeatedly do this thing over and over again whenever it needs to be done. So how far away do you think those are, the kind of virtual assistants which work proactively?
The capability of being proactive is already there, but it has a big consequence. if they did something wrong, there was backlash on the company. That's why they are very cautious. But the capability is there. It's the same as the React. The proactive just in terms of computer capability, they can plan, they can just send you regular, they can even send email on behalf of you. That they can do. But they don't want to make a mistake that send out of your 10 friends, they send it to someone who's not. And you, it's like when you go to doctor, maybe 90% say you don't have a cancer, but the only time they make a mistake, that could be big backlash.
So that's is that the reason why they're holding back? They're just being really cautious about it.
Yes, they want to reach certain accuracy level.
So where do you where when do you think we'll actually reach an accuracy level where we'll be able to make them more proactive? Do you think that's happening in the next year or 2 years, or how far out do you think that might be?
Alexa is already being proactive by ordering, by asking me if I want to order the bath tissues, the things I ordered before. So they're starting on that very cautiously on that direction. Maybe they will start with more educational, like play your audiobook for you. That doesn't have much consequence, right? Order something your daily use may not be that big deal. But if they do much higher transaction or other things related to your family, there's more consequence there. So they have to gradually roll that out.
No, because I would love for it to be able to learn that this is what I do. So say, for example, every time I step into my office at a certain time of day, I usually fire up this audio, like my last audiobook. Right. So if it could detect that I'm doing that, it said, okay, it's 6 p.m. or whatever time you step into your office at that day on that time, at that time, he normally starts his audiobook. I love for Alexa to be able to say, hey, normally you listen to your audiobook at this time. Do you want me to start it? So, I mean, that kind of proactivity, I'd love to be able to see. So you think it's pretty close. It's just hasn't been enabled yet.
It's there. They just not sure if that out of 7 days, you have 2 days, you have a meeting at that time. They don't want to annoy you.
Right.
So
But if
if they do that, they could make you annoyed. They think about now we have apps on the phone. There are many notifications. Notification essentially is trying to be proactive to let you check things. They remind you doing things, and then people just turn off the notification now.
Right.
So if you start to turn off what they recommend you, then you won't go back. So it's very dangerous for
Right.
them to make you turn off their app.
Yeah, so I understand that why that would be very. So, like another thing is, I've noticed that do you really need to have a lot of computing? It sounds like you still need a lot of computing capacity for this stuff. This is why our virtual assistants have basically have winnowed themselves down to only the ones that have come from major corporations, right? Because for a while there, we did have some Kickstarters, and there were a few other people doing other kinds of virtual assistants, and there was Viv and a few others. But now it seems like the market is sort of solidified on just these two or three major players. And do you see opportunity for someone else to spring up, or do you think that the processing power required to make these things work really well requires that sort of massive investment in computing power and data collection and all that stuff?
There are AI startups in Silicon Valley. I would say hundreds of AI startups here in Silicon Valley, and there are many AI startups in other regions. For small company, the good news is that many AI software are open sourced. The one number two is the computing power now hosted on Google platform, like called Colab, Colab. It's totally free. You can run your model there. You can build your system there for free. Amazon also open up their system for people to play with. You can get a machine there to play with their machine. So if you want to start on a prototype, and you can certainly do it. And once you have prototype, you have a company back you up to really want to buy your product. They will give you money. I see there's still a lot of opportunity for AI startups.
Oh, really? And but they're leveraging all of this data and the tools that are already out there, the open source tools.
Yes, and
Okay.
many data open source, video data, many video data is open source, image data open sourced.
So they don't have to build their own set of data and all that. They could just leverage this to build whatever. So if they want to build an AI tool that works on top of all that, the data and the tools are
Yes.
already available. That's cool. So
Yes.
have you heard about this thing? Have you heard about this thing where OpenAI didn't want to release the algorithm to create really good content? Did you hear that in the news the other day?
Did not, or they didn't.
They
They
didn't.
did.
So apparently they came out with an algorithm that was so good that it was able to generate content that had such high quality that you could not detect whether it was written by a human or not. And they were concerned that the algorithm was so good that bad actors would use it to create content, to create fake news and all sorts of other junk that they didn't want to see on the internet. So they actually made, this is the first time they've ever made sort of like an ethical decision to not release a certain set of software into the OpenAI project because of that concern. So, I mean, have you heard that? Did you hear that news item or?
I didn't follow news recently, but I
Okay.
do know OpenAI used to be very open in sharing their data source or data algorithm. The concern is certainly valid. And actually, even before this if this news, we would worry about terrorists or hackers, whatever, get a hold of AI. There's a movie, TV show series in Black Mirror, where they have these bees, right, that can track a person, and everyone controls that bees. So they use that to kill, people hate a person on the social media. They can use that remotely control to kill a person, right? And all the technology, once fall into the wrong people's hand, could be very dangerous. And AI is so powerful. So when OpenAI makes that decision, it's inevitable. So I actually in the beginning doubt they can make everything open source because there are always a concern of how you. It's like a nuclear weapon. When it's so powerful, do you really want everyone have access to it?
Right, but that kind of defeats the whole purpose of openness, though, right? I mean, isn't that, I mean, how do you, because I think what they did is they actually released a dumbed down version of the algorithm so you can get an idea of what it's like, but and you can see the dumbed down version obviously isn't as good as the real algorithm would be if they're really that afraid of it. But then what happens now? I mean, does that algorithm ever get released or?
I want to give you analysis. Suppose they create an excellent program to break all the facial recognition software that create a fake face to enter every building. Should they release that? Certainly not, right? Because that's a security concern. The same thing here, whether people consider that's a very important issue or not important, could be very important for college entrance, for other special, very important jobs. So when a computer algorithm have so much power, I totally understand that they are cautious about it.
Well, what would happen then? I mean, they've decided not to release this algorithm. Does that mean they're never going to release it? Or who is going to get a chance to use it? Because it sounds like they're really holding back technology that might be very helpful in some cases. So, do we just go on the assumption, and this is what open source is built on, the assumption that whoever takes this stuff and uses it is actually not a bad actor and is going to do good things with it? Or do we really have to start sort of drawing the line and saying this is, I know there's some cryptography that's not exportable and stuff like that, but do we have to start drawing the line on open source stuff too? It sounds like it, right?
I think so because before open source seems harmless, just some snippets, some code segment. But now they have power. They can rewrite security system. They can hack into certain system. They are so powerful that they like the whole computer network can be controlled by certain system, right? And so this is a game changer now. I think what we are waiting for is the new public law enforcement, certain law to be passed, legislation that could change. When we have the day for step up, then we can start to see the development.
So, do you see quantum computing doing anything here as well? I mean, is quantum computing useful? for anything AI, or is it in a totally different field?
It's still in a different field.
Okay.
We haven't used the quantum computing yet, but I heard, well, they're in the more physics department, in
Yeah.
other part, or so in my field, in the AI field, we haven't used it yet.
Yeah, because I've heard that quantum computing is really not suitable for certain things. I mean, there's certain things it's very suitable for, right? But there's other things that it's not. So it sounds as if, science fiction, aside from science fiction, using quantum computing to create artificial intelligences is not really a thing yet, because quantum computing is not really something that's applicable to what's happening in AI. But I'm assuming there at some point maybe there will be something that quantum computers can do which will affect AI, and then that's when, of course, Skynet will appear and we'll have Terminator and all that stuff
Well,
will happen,
even
right?
without that, Terminator could happen too, even with the current UI.
Oh yeah, we don't need Terminator for that. I mean, we could just do it. Our systems are, sometimes I wonder how these things stay together at all, right? I mean, considering, the problems we have with your internet connections going down and you're losing Wi-Fi and all that stuff. I mean, it's like no wonder they're being cautious with all this stuff, because the systems themselves, even the bedrock foundational stuff, isn't there all the time. I mean, with autonomous vehicles, the vehicles themselves almost have to be intelligent enough on their own, because what if they lose connection to the cloud while they're driving? Right? They need to know
Yes.
what they're doing
Yes.
on their
The
own.
backup is very important. That's why even Alexa has a client system. So we call this a server client system. All the client system, all the technology connected to the internet should have a backup locally in case the connection is not there.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of times we take it for granted that the connection will always be there, and that's what happens when you're so when you have a smart home that's connected to the internet and controlled by the internet, when you lose your internet connection, what do you do, right? You have to go around and sort of manually turn everything on and off.
This is the same as electricity, right? And now we cannot imagine live without electricity. When the power goes down, I remember 1 year in Palo Alto, the power went down because of the airplane struck the power line. And for those 4 hours, we lost internet. We cannot work. Everyone went home.
Yeah, you
So
couldn't
we
do
are so
anything.
dependent. Yeah.
I remember there was the days when we lost internet, we would just get up and actually talk to each other at the office. But then now it's like you can't really do anything at all, because everything's on the cloud, and if you're not connected to it, it's totally useless. So, I mean, I think we're going to get to that point with AI too, right? We're going to be so dependent on it that it's got to be rock solid, that we can never lose our connection with it, because we're going to get to a point where, I mean, I already throw everything into my phone knowledge-wise, because I never remember anything. And so I know if I need to remember something, I put it in my phone, I put my address book, etc. So my phone is my backup brain, and it knows everything. So if I forget it, it's there, because I'm typically going to forget it. If I didn't have it, then I would have to write it down. It would be much more difficult to remember things. So we're going to get to a point where AI is in that same place as electricity and internet, where it's necessary and it has to be there. And we really can't do anything about it, right? You can't push back on it and say, no, we don't need that, because it's just going to march on.
Right, that's
Right.
true. And the good news is because we know there will be power outage, there will be downtime, everything now is back up 3 times. Basically for big data, for all the data you stored, the company always have 3 backup copies. The same thing for AI copies, and the same thing now everyone use Dropbox or Google Drive. Even if you lose everything on your computer, you can get it from the cloud.
And if you think about it, all the edge computing devices, like your smartphones and your cars and everything, they're all going to have so much memory and processing power anyway that they'll be able to do stuff on their own, even if they've lost connection. So we're getting to the point where we do have a pretty robust system that will operate even if in outages and disasters and stuff like that. So
Yes.
it's getting better every day. I'm always an optimist on all this stuff. So it's like everything's getting better every day. Well, this is fantastic. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what do they do? How do they do you have a website? What's the best way
Yeah,
for them
you
to get?
can reach me by email. My first name, JunLing, at AIPRO.io. And also, they can get my book from Amazon and just search my name, Junling Hu. The book is The Evolution of Artificial Intelligence.
Well, when I get the, it will be in the show notes for the show, so people can link to it and they'll be able to download it and read it from there. But it was a great book. I love, like I said, I love the little anecdotes of the inventors. It really kind of puts me in mind because I kind of like hearing the stories of how things were invented and what the mindset of the inventor was when they were coming up with these things. So I thought that was really
Right.
interesting. So
And
I really
that's,
enjoyed your book.
yeah, thank you. When I wrote this book, I particularly picked those stories, like from Turing. The people I picked are the real inventor that has some fundamental breakthrough. So that's how I write the story to tell people what seems very mysterious. Actually, it's just the normal people. They come up with a solution to a problem. So, like speech recognition, the first person invented the speech recognition. When he's come up with this so-called hidden Markov model, James Baker, he's just curious. He's a mathematical major. He's curious about how we can recognize the word based on just the sound wave, right? Seems impossible, but he figure out a way to map from a physical the sound in the air to what we human hear as a word. That kind of breakthrough I want to show people. It's just step by step. The AI is not mysterious. It's just we. It's like we are inventing and we are trying to understand the natural world. It's like a mathematician trying to understand what's going on. And we over time build this capacity to be able to process what is considered as magic, sound, image. Now it's nothing, it's they all break down into just numbers.
Everything, the world is numbers underneath it all. It's all math.
Yes, that's right.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. This was great.
Thank you. Thank you.